Welcome, everyone. Today we are going to talk about the third set of case histories in Pathways to Pain Relief by Fran Anderson and Eric Sherman. We're going to be talking about two case histories in the section of the book written by Dr. Sherman, and they both focus on anger and why we feel the need to repress anger and how that affects us, and to some degree how we can overcome that, find a more productive relationship with our anger. The story, I don't know if anyone here has actually read the story. I know that when I read an article, it's really helpful for me to read comments by other people. So I'm going to give you a little bit of context for the story to let you know some of the main ideas, and then we can talk about it and maybe connect it to our own experience. And I think that'll be the most valuable thing that we can do. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the themes and then ask some discussion questions and see how people can relate to it. So the first section is about how of the book is about how we repress our anger because we feel like we have to keep people happy. And Eric Sherman goes a lot back into, if the roots of our psychology are in our childhood, he explains how the child thinks, how it is that the child decided way back when it was first confronted with challenges or first had to decide what to do when it was angry, why it decided to stuff its anger down into a hole, why we decided to stuff our anger down into a hole. The thing which he emphasizes a lot, in my opinion, is how scary it is to be a child. When you're a child, you don't know if you're going to survive, and little thoughtless things which your parents might do to you can be absolutely terrifying to you. For example, if you're angry at your parents, you think that maybe your parents can see everything that you're saying, and you wonder if I'm angry at them, are they going to see this? Or are they going to be angry back at me? Maybe they'll leave. And he talks about a story where someone said, "I wish you never existed." A little baby, a little kid, a little toddler. You can kind of imagine that happening. Says that to the parents, and then the parent says, "Oh, I'll just go away," which is absolutely terrifying to the kid because they're completely dependent upon their parents. So if you go back to that psychology, you can say, where did we first learn to repress our anger? And that was to keep people happy with us, to prevent ourselves from being abandoned, and to protect ourselves. And I think you can also see that in adults. World as well. We go through life and there are people who anger us at work, people who, we have love relationships with, and we may be angry at them, but sometimes we have to keep that under our hats. We have to stuff it down. And that can be productive or unproductive, in my opinion. I am not an expert. So he talks about that. The thing which I thought was interesting is he says, he talks a lot about ambivalence. So let's bring it up to Peter. So Peter was this guy. He is a dad. And I find that for a lot of people, one hears a lot of parenting anger stories, frankly, in the TMS world. I actually, I'll refer to two of them here. And Peter is one of them. So he's a 40-year-old architect and a father of four young children. His two oldest are stepchildren from his wife's first marriage that he adopted. And he was bringing his children to the county fair during a summer vacation, and they were bickering constantly in the back seat of the minivan. I think we can all relate to this, right? Even though he understood that this is what happens, he was also appalled and frightened, and probably just wanted them to shut up. He was appalled and frightened when he found himself fantasizing about getting out of the car and leaving his kids by the side of the road to fend for themselves. Now, obviously, that would have done gigantic trauma to the kids, and so he didn't do that. But he was scared that he was even thinking about it, and he felt that because he was considering that, he was a bad parent, so he just kind of shoved it down deep inside. And so I think that this highlights a very powerful thing for parenting and how us TMSers relate to parenting is the ambivalence that we may have. Eric has a great quote. Dr. Sherman has a great quote. What distinguishes saints from ordinary men and women is how they deal with the feelings of anger or whatever else, not the mistaken notion that they are fundamentally incapable of experiencing them. So this chapter comes right after the chapter on perfectionism, and perfectionism is a defense mechanism that we try to protect ourselves with by being perfect. People will love me if I'm perfect, if I do all of these things amazingly. And one of the ways that we try to protect ourselves is by never being angry. So I'm going to unmute. This is the end of my monologue. I mean, I could definitely go on. I have that capability. We have the technology to talk forever. But I'd love to get some of you in there. It looks like Stock Trader has gotten a pair of headphones. Thank you. And I mean, I think overall that this is pretty powerful stuff. Everything in this chapter is powerful stuff, and it really hits at the core of a lot of what TMS is about. So I just thought I'd open up the discussion to talk about anger and TMS in general. And does this resonate with anyone? Can anyone feel anger? Does anyone feel like they stuff their anger?
This is Andy.
Andy.
For me, when I read the TMS stuff a few weeks ago and began to really engage with it for some long-time severe foot pain, what I know is that I've worked for 15 years doing a lot of inner work to understand my anger with very skilled teachers, psychotherapists, not related to pain. And the first thing that hit me was, I know all about my anger. I'm not stuffing it. But then what I realized is I know about my anger, but my superego really has me on the ropes about my anger. So that was just something I wanted to throw out there that when you talk about ambivalence or when I think about inner pressure, there is a tremendous pressure between anger, which I think is natural and a way to make a change. As a child, you get angry because you just want things to be different. And I do as an adult. And it's okay. But at the same time, I just have a vicious inner critic superego, which is
Yeah.
using, in the Freudian terms, is using the aggression against the organism to contain that anger. And so when Sarno says pressure, I can just literally feel that pressure between the two things, my own anger, my own desire to be myself in that moment, which means to be angry. And I don't necessarily mean acting that out on anybody. I just mean feeling it or acknowledging it in my body. The inner critic goes crazy and it has an aggressive reaction inward. And so there's a tremendous amount of pressure, and so that's the way I feel anger. And I think the main thing I'm working on is just to disengage from the inner critic, and work with it that way.
It's so important. I love that image of pressure, and that inner critic never goes away either. Like it's always there, but we can come a lot better at. Well, actually, Alan Gordon talks about getting angry at the inner critic. Like, how dare you? How dare you distract me on this? I'm just being a human. How dare you criticize me for having these real emotions? But it's a process. At least it is in my experience. Yeah, I love that image of
Thank
pressure
you.
there.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Thoughts on that?
This is Lily here.
Hey, Lily.
And what I am connecting to is last Sunday evening, under the pressure of having some friends over for dinner. I mean, it was a lovely dinner, but I was stressed about having folks into my home, I found myself getting really angry at my husband. And what actually then came out of my mouth was how furious and enraged I am about how this chronic pain is taking over my life. And it was, I can connect to the last person who spoke about, you know, having done some very good work over the years to really understand my anger, but I think what I probably haven't done that much of is really feeling and finding different ways to express the rage that I feel about what is happening to my life.
Yeah. It seems like that might be, there's probably even more pressure using Andy's word, there's even more pressure on women, I would suspect, to bottle this up. So even more work to do. I can totally relate to that. With the story that you're telling actually resonates a lot with something that Dr. Sherman did in the chapter. Is so he said, you know, before we start, I just want to be clear that no TMSer would ever choose or would never consciously choose this pain. But let's, I mean, the pain of TMS is just like if you're hurtling down a highway and you lose control and you can either steer into the embankment or head over the cliff. TMS is like steering into the embankment. It's just a quick self-protective thing to protect you from these things which terrorize you, again, from childhood. But then he talks about how, for Peter at least, that the anger was great because if Peter had some needs to be taken care of, to express their anger, having that be about this terrible physical pain was a great defense for them, for him, in that, and I think maybe in my experience that my RSI, my TMS, allowed me to get the care that I needed. Because I was a victim and people had to be sympathetic to me. And I didn't ever consciously do that. But I don't even know if I unconsciously did it. I just know that I guess it worked out that way. And that might explain why my unconscious would want to create these symptoms. Do you see any of that in what you were just talking about? Can you see that in your own experience? Of the argument with the husband, because I noticed that you ended up talking about the pain, and it just feels like that's so much safer to talk about the pain than to say, hey, I need your support here. This is stressful. I hate entertaining, but I love it.
Oh, no, I did. I started with that, actually.
Oh, really? Okay. All right.
Oh, yeah. No, I think that, I'm trying to remember which one I started with. And then I don't remember, but I definitely got that in. But that's an interesting point about which one is safer. And I'll have to think about that.
Huh. Dr. Sherman talks about what he calls the lethality of anger, that part of us, you know, maybe the inner child is terrified that if we let this anger out, what's going to happen? And, you know, yeah, certainly we're trained in complex society that it can be dangerous to let your anger out. Thanks for sharing. Anyone else?
Hi, Forrest. It's Barbara.
Hey, Barbara.
I was just thinking that if anybody could relate to this, when I get angry, I get really sick. My symptoms get more exacerbated, and they do crazy things, and I really haven't heard anybody say that, because when you feel your anger, you're supposed to, the symptoms go away, But in my case, it's different. When I feel anger, symptoms are exacerbated.
Anyone want to jump in on that?
Well, this is Dustin. My question would be, are you really... I mean, I know when I'm angry, but if I'm not able to fully express that, it doesn't always help just to know that I'm angry. Like it might, my physical symptoms can be worse. And you know, Dr. Sarno talks about how you can repress anger and still be conscious of it to some degree, and or that it exists both conscious. You can be conscious of it and still have unconscious anger because of it. And so I would question the possibility of, you know, recognizing that you're angry about something, but maybe not treating yourself with the compassion that you need to, or allowing yourself to express it in the way that you need to, so that the unconscious mind is still repressing part of that same anger. That's just a possibility that I would consider based on what I've read and experienced myself. But, I don't know if that resonates with you or not. But.
Andy here. If Sarno says that, he says that most of the real problems for the rage is unconscious, that you're never really going to be aware of that level of rage, that I'm just thinking perhaps, and maybe with me too, when the anger arises and it's conscious, it may in fact bring up huge amounts of defensive systems. So because the reservoir of rage is being exposed slightly, and that's very threatening. So as I get closer to that reservoir of rage with being angry consciously, that may throw up a lot more defenses, therefore the pain.
Makes a lot of sense. We did a peer supervision group for psychotherapists on Sunday, last Sunday, and one thing which came up from Dr. Anderson is some old psychoanalytic wisdom that if there's a psychosomatic symptom, mind-body symptom,
let's see,
someone just turned on speakers and I'm hearing some reverb from myself. Can anyone turn off the speakers? Thank you so much. That there's probably a deep need, and that it's important in therapy for people with psychosomatic symptoms to go very, very slowly, because you don't know what it is that symptom is covering up. And Barbara, I've certainly on the forums, I think people, when they dive in and they're trying to work through things, I think it's some people do notice that their symptoms flare up when they tap into that anger. And I think maybe, you know, it's a gentle process. I've noticed that Dr. Sarno, you know, the master clinician, how does he handle it? He starts just pure with education. He doesn't go deep into the emotions. And when he does go deep into the emotions, for those of his patients who need it, he does it in the context of some of these very, very experienced psychoanalytic psychologists like Dr. Anderson and Dr. Sherman. And I know from interacting with Dr. Anderson that I think she's very, very careful. She, in my perception, I can't speak for her, but as I watch her and her conference presentations, etc., the impression that I get is that she teaches people, even the therapists, to listen to their bodies, to think about how they... what reactions they're having in their bodies. And it might be just that bringing up this anger is revving you up, and I think that there's an awful lot to be said for cooling yourself down, for soothing yourself. I think soothing is tremendously powerful, learning how to soothe yourself. Does anyone have positive experiences in healing their TMS with soothing themselves? In saying, where is my anger coming from, and saying, okay, I'm aware that I'm angry, but I'm not necessarily going to let that anger hype me up. That I'm gonna be authentic. I'm going to be mindful of the anger and be real, but I'm gonna keep myself soothed.
This is Lily again. I'm just thinking about how I have been very angry about how burdened I've felt at work,
mm-hmm.
and feeling angry at my manager. And unfortunately, I've made some mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And that I feel I have this image in my mind of walking around, of that, of having like these bands that circle my chest area that are keeping me too, you know, that cause me to restrain myself and restrict myself and hold me back, and
wow.
wanting to just, you know, like pop them open with my energy. But I feel that my anger really scares me. I mean, I grew up with a woman, with a mother who was very enraged, and it was very scary. But that I've been connecting to feelings in my chest of wanting to feel love, to be loved, and to love, and that I realize that as I'm feeling angry, that what I really want is to connect. And that is, you know, not to cover up the anger, to release it and to connect. So I don't know if that's helpful or not, but I meditate, so that's very useful for me, and it helps me really connect to my chest and to the energy there. So I just wanted to share that.
When you say that you find you really want to connect, are you saying you really want to connect to that emotion within yourself, or the internal connection you're seeking, or external connection?
Well, both. That what I want to be connected to is the part of me that is deeply loving. And that I want to find the best in other people and connect to other people.
It's interesting that you mentioned that connection. It reminds me, sorry to interrupt, I don't know if you've read Steve Ozanich's book, The Great Pain Deception, but I think the main theme for him in that book is it's about our need to connect. And I think that's close to I don't know that much about the different approaches to psychotherapy, but I think that one of the big ones is about relating to people. And that, you know, relationships, I think for many schools of psychotherapy, really drive everything. Steve uses the term tricordification, the need to draw people together.
I think that's a basic human need that we've, you know, as we've gone out of tribal communities and things like that, we've kind of lost a lot of the connections that we used to have, and we're having to relearn how to do that as we learn that it's an essential part of existence, I think.
I also loved how there was a connection between anger and caring and love. There's been a lot of talk recently about ISTDP, which stands for Intensive Short-Term Dynamic Psychotherapy. That isn't the approach that Anderson and Sherman use, but it is the approach that another one of Dr. Sarno's oldest psychotherapist uses, Arlene Feinblatt. And as it's practiced by some other members of the community, it focuses a lot on rage. There's a lot of, at my understanding at least, there's a lot of tapping into anger that you might feel towards these figures in your life, maybe parents, maybe in the case of Peter, children. I think in the hands of a skilled ISTDP practitioner, it starts off with rage, and you really feel the rage, but then you turn it around. But once you've expressed that and let that out, it makes it easier to feel the love afterwards. It's interesting that you mentioned meditation, because the two people in the movement who have recently taken up ISTDP, Alan Gordon and Howard Schubiner, are both big meditators, very, very into mindfulness.
Well, and the thing about the rage when I was growing up, and the reason why it was so awful for me, was that I, and the reason getting in touch with my loving feelings is so vital, is that I felt that I didn't have that much capacity to love. And I now understand how profoundly terrible, or what a horrid, horrid impact that had on me, and that feeling that you can love and really love normally is critical. So anyway, the rage made that difficult.
It sounds devastating. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think is it about anger that makes it so hard to express?
Personally, I think it's just socially unacceptable. I mean, when I was a teenager, I had no problem expressing it, but I worked really hard as I found negative repercussions from expressing anger, or at least the way that I was expressing anger. And I worked really hard to stop doing that, and essentially that's when my pain started, is when I thought I had taught myself how to not be angry, where in fact all I had really done is just repress the emotion itself. But ultimately, I thought to do that because, you know, it caused problems socially, and I think there's not a lot of good models out there for learning how to constructively express anger without causing those kinds of issues.
Interesting.
Hi, Forrest. This is Barbara. I had the same problem. I tried to not be angry and be really, you know, kind to everybody and not be angry at people, and that's when my pain began also. And I think that what happened to me was I had been in a ministry, and they said being angry was sin and you have to stop being angry, so I stopped being angry and expressing my anger, and I got really sick. So now when I notice that the anger comes up and I get angry, I think that I have conflicting emotions and conflicting thoughts and beliefs, and so it makes me sick and I'm feeling the anger at the same time. I don't know if anybody has anything to say about that, but it's very difficult because I'm really, just what you just said, there's not great models out there about what to do and how to feel your anger.
And Barbara, you were the one saying earlier that when you get angry, you feel more pain.
Yes.
Is that correct? Yeah. Well, I wonder, in light of what you just said, I wonder if you haven't subconsciously, you know, like you said, you sort of trained yourself to believe that anger was bad, and so now when you feel anger, you feel like ashamed of yourself for feeling anger, or feel guilty for having those emotions, and they're then angry at yourself for feeling anger, you know, potentially.
I definitely think that's true. Definitely. Guilt over being angry, definitely.
Can anyone else relate to this this idea that one emotion, specifically anger, cancels out the positive ones? I mean, I think that was key for Peter in this story, is realizing that that ambivalence is okay, and that ambivalence is human. There's a quote in there which says, "Anger and love often coexist in anguish or acceptance. Anger does not cancel out love, or vice versa. It's not like there's some algebra." Where you can subtract them, except for in the minds of the insistent goodists whose sense of moral perfectionism, like us, demands of purity of heart for defensive purposes to keep us protected.
Hi, this is Nina. I haven't said anything yet, but a lot of it is because there's this incredible roaring, like you're right in the middle of an ocean, and it's I can hear everybody, but it's very distracting, you know, to try and get my thoughts together. But anyway, I don't know if I'm answering the question that you've just asked, but I'll tell you, I'm very aware. I've been on a lifelong anger, you know, what to do with anger quest. I actually had a dream, and I was back in the womb, and I was mad as hell at God for forcing me into this world. And my son is, interestingly, who's now about 40, I'm almost 70, he had exactly the same thing. And he said, you know, the main thing that we're really mad about is at God for putting us here, making us go through this. So I've been doing this since I was a fetus, apparently. And in my family, adults were allowed to be angry, but kids weren't. So I repressed it throughout my childhood and chose sadness again. But as soon as I became a bit older, especially when I had my own kids, then according to my family dynamics, it was all right to be mad at them and to express rage. And so, of course, obviously you can't do that, so you have to go, you know, trying to work on changing all that thing. But I just wanted to say that I am now, like I say, pushing 70, becoming very aware that anger is love. It is love. It's just twisted sideways. And if you're an angry person, that's because you're a loving person. If you're not a loving person, there's really nothing to be angry about. You just walk away. That's it.
Can you say more about that, about the connection between anger and love? I'd love a few more words about that.
Okay,
it's so brilliant.
Okay. Well, you know, I really had never actually thought of it. Like, I realized listening to previous people talking, the lady who was saying that she wants to be loving. And yeah, that's exactly it. You know, you want, just for me anyway, you want to be loving. You are loving, in fact, because if you're not loving, you don't want to be loving. Okay, so you want to be loving, but you know, bad stuff has happened to you, and so in order to keep yourself from being loving and loving in situations where you feel you're going to be badly hurt or abandoned or whatever, you use rage, and some people use sadness, of course, and you know, I don't think they're all that different either. I think we're I don't know how to put it, but there's just a great oneness here, and it just depends whether it's our conscious mind, which I think is you know, very practical and kind of the CEO of your life, as someone once put it, and then there's the great unconscious, you know, sort of a Jungian thing where you know, it's so big that you might as well just not worry too much about it, just enjoy it and learn from it. And then there's, to me also, there's a soul level, and the soul level is mysterious, and you have no idea really what it thinks. And so all these parts are in there, and they all have a kind of a different point of view. And over a lifetime, what you try and do is reconcile them, so that you become more or less a whole human being who knows what they think and control the parts and suppress rather than repress the parts that have to be suppressed at this moment and so on. Does that help?
Yeah, I guess part of what just to drill right into, in what way is love anger, or anger love, loving?
It's like being a fish, you know, and somebody says, somebody says to the fish, well, you know, water is wet, and the fish says, well, what do you mean by wet? And it's exactly the same sort of thing. Like, I had no idea that this was true until that love and anger are the same thing, just a different way of expressing it because of safety concerns for yourself, you know. Like in my, I mean, when I was a kid, it was, you absolutely could not express anger, wasn't allowed. You also couldn't express love because the adults in my life did not really believe in it. They believed in, the only strong emotion that they were permitted was anger. Excuse me, and we could stay in our room and cry if we liked, but other than that, there was no emotion whatsoever allowed, eh? So I decided when I was 8 that they were the problem, not me, and they were jerks, and I hated their guts. I hated them. And that's sort of goofy in a way because they were my parents and they weren't, you know, wholly bad by any stretch, just sick. And so I thought to myself as I got older, well, this won't do as a way to relate to everybody. So then, of course, I divided the world into good and bad, and there were people that were worth loving, and there were jerks, you know, and like my parents or like my entire family, as a matter of fact. And of course, that doesn't really work because eventually you learn that that even people who are monsters actually have loving sides to them, you know. I had a dear, dear friend, and I mean this guy was a super good friend to my family, and he turned out to be a serial rapist, for God's sake.
Oh my God, that's horrible.
It was horrible. And the thing is that, you know, we sort of knew he was a little bit weird, but he'd deliver and he'd disappear and he would not come back until he was over whatever it was. But anyway, long and short of it is that he wrote to me and he said, I want you to write to the judge and say that I'm a good person with a bad problem, because they were going to give him a kind of a habitual criminal thing and never let him out again. And I wrote back and I said, no, you are a good person with a terrible problem, and I love you and I always will, but you should be locked up and left there. And like, this guy is dangerous. This guy is dangerous. He could...
I'm worried that this could be a little bit of a sidetrack, so I want to bring back
I just mean that everybody out there is, like, when we first come into this world, I think we have the capacity to really have a big capacity to love, and it gets beat out of us, okay? Yeah. And it really does. It gets beat out of us, and then we have to get it back. We have to get it back with wisdom so that you don't associate with, you know, people that you love when they're serial rapists, is what I was trying to say. You know, you just learn to see the loving part, love the part of them, and protect yourself at the same time. Like, you don't have to be in a rage all the time, is what I'm saying, because the rage is a defense against the love. There.
Hmm. In terms of love, love and anger, there's a great quote from Elie Wiesel, a writer and a Nobel laureate, actually, and a Holocaust survivor. He says that the opposite of love is not hate, it's indifference. Maybe that captures it a little bit. Dr. Anderson in the book says indifference is actually the opposite of love, perhaps a nod to Elie Wiesel. But for people with TMS, anger equals the threat of unlovability. Peter was unable to dispel his feelings of shame and self-loathing, even when he reminded himself of how devoted he was to his children. Over time, though, Peter was able to overcome that. In his treatment, Dr. Anderson writes, Peter learned that feelings were private emotional experiences, not measures of morality. This knowledge emboldened Peter to explore the complexities of his inner life. Previously, the only feelings available to him were anger and fear of abandonment, but this taught him that the ambivalence was okay and that we can be really angry at people whom we love. We should probably wrap up, but all of us are more than welcome, in fact, encouraged to relocate to the chat room, our drop-in chat that we have every Saturday from 3 to 4 New York time is at www.tmswiki.org/chat. So you can go there and join the conversation. In terms of holding ambivalent feelings, you know, different feelings pointing in different directions in our mind, does anyone have any final thoughts on that as we prepare to wrap up? Or any final thoughts in general? Anything that you've learned from the call that you want to make sure to take away with and perhaps share with other people along the way that have helped?
We're thinking.
Let
you know later.
Oh, terrific.
I'll say something.
Oh, go ahead.
Please do.
You go ahead.
Well, I forgot what the lady who was talking about the difficult friends and relatives, just her name a moment ago, but it made me think of when she was talking about like an ocean of love, it made me think of like the Buddhist expression, one taste, that there is just consciousness that we experience at some level, and that my perfectionism, my fear of not being loved, my inner child, is very careful to try to discern and divide out all these flavors into safe and unsafe and good and bad. And like anger's bad and that they can't coexist. So there's this capacity of discernment which we have, which is natural, but then there's a way that the child, the inner child, is using that in such a difficult way that it really does believe that if there is anger, there is nothing else there, and that the anger is bad. So I appreciate the kind of induction into that kind of one taste idea today, that I can kind of begin to contemplate that a little bit more, that things are blended and mixed and universal rather than one or the other. So thank you all.
Thank
yeah,
you.
That's a, on that note, I would just add, because I majored in religious studies and I'm really into all these different, how those philosophies span various things, but it's like what you're just talking about and the concept of love and anger being one and the same, it all goes back, if you take Christianity as an example, the whole idea of like once we understood a difference between good and evil is when we start having problems, you know, and all these, and all religions have this remote, pretty much all that I'm aware of have some concept of order coming from chaos. And so that idea that all of these things need to coexist, it's all part of the same one whole thing. So, you know, maybe that can help us not feel ashamed or guilty for feeling fear because we want to be people who feel love or whatever, you know, just to understand that it's all a necessary part of the one thing, as you were just getting at. So I thank everyone as well for sharing their thoughts.
Thank you. It's been fun for us.
Yeah, thank you all for joining us. We've got a very nice crowd here, and it just adds so much to my appreciation of the book to hear all of your stories. So thank you for joining us. Next week we'll cover another story and another aspect. Last week we did anger. Next week we will do the next one, and I hope to hear some of you then. Until then, I will see you in the chat room at www.tmswiki.org/chat, and thank you everyone for sharing your wisdom. Hey everyone. So before we started discussing the book, we had a little bit of informal discussion that I wasn't planning on including, but some people suggested that I should. They wanted to hear it because it came up in the chat room afterwards. So here it is.
This is Dustin. I was just real roughly curious if anyone has any advice on becoming less dependent on, I cannot break my dependency on taking ibuprofen to get through my day, and I know that a lot of people have said you just have to stop doing it, but like I can't figure out how to make the pain go away without that. And it does help briefly to think psychologically, but as I'm going through stuff and just getting it, going through regular routines, I can't seem to break that. If anyone had any advice on that,
Does anyone have any advice for Dustin? I'll chime in. So I think the most important thing is to be patient with yourself. I think that, you know, it is really, really helpful. It certainly was very helpful for me to resume activity and to put aside all of kind of the physical thinking crutches that you may have. But I'm very compassionate with myself in regards personally for me and my physical crutches, because I think that sometimes, you know, they just help, and you want to get rid of them because they drag you back to thinking physically rather than emotionally, rather than thinking about it as what it really is. But, you know, if they help you for a little while, give them a try, and then later on maybe you feel comfortable putting it aside. And I think putting it aside is a good habit to get into, but I think that's just the way that it works. I had a relapse a little while ago. It wasn't really a relapse because it was a new symptom. Does anyone else do that, by the way? Have any, like, little crutches that they use? I probably shouldn't admit it. Just joking.
Oh, boy. Yeah, it's a good question, isn't it? I've done a lot of getting off of this and that, and I think it's just mostly for me, it's just a matter of I don't want to be doing this, and so I cut back and I find other things, and, you know, if anything works, I just cut it back and cut it back. And what I've found, actually, is that if I can get off stuff like ibuprofen and so on, that any pain I do have is less. If I take ibuprofen for a few days, the pain increases, so that's very motivating.
Yeah. So I had this relapse, and all of a sudden I had this weird pain, right? I think the word is deeper, closer to my heart. Between my right scapula and my heart, or I don't know. Anyway, in that region, and it happened whenever I lifted my arm, whenever I used my arm at all, the pain just jumped in, and it didn't just jump in, it jumped in hard, like it was very significant. They talk about a dagger, it didn't feel quite like that, but it was intense. And so I said, I know that this is TMS. I have no doubt that it's TMS, because really there's no excuse. There's just absolutely no reason that out of nowhere, immediately after, someone who I have complicated feelings towards started talking to me about how she was considering committing suicide. And personally, I was really angry at her because I felt like she was manipulating me, and I felt angry at myself because I wasn't being more compassionate. This will totally play into what we're covering. So this is a story from my life, from someone who I deal with, who I care about a lot, but at the same time, I have a frustrated relationship with. So that happened, and then 2 days later, all of a sudden, you know, I got this absolutely new pain in a random part of my body. I'm like, this is obviously TMS, but it really is very distracting whenever I try to raise my arm. So I did something which is almost verboten within the TMS community. I said, I know what's going to help me think about this less. I'm going to wear an arm sling. And so I put an arm sling on it. I think it was gone within a couple of days. Now, I'm not saying necessarily that if you try something like that the symptom will be gone within a couple of days, but that is what worked for me in that case. And to me, it said, I think everybody's different, but for me, it said that it is valuable and worthwhile to sometimes just not worry about it and just say, I'm just not going to think about it. That it was okay for me to use the sling. I guess that's what it taught me. Can't argue with what works.
You feel like that's like a, almost like a metaphorical care package for your, you know, like somehow by like putting that sling on, you're just acknowledging to the, at having the state of awareness to know that it is an emotionally based thing, but it's like a symbolic caring for the problem.
I had never thought about it, but yes, I think that. I mean, I've had a lot in my 18 years of dealing with the symptoms. I had a lot of ambivalence over, is this real or is this not real? And I was arguing forever that this is a real physical problem, that I could damage myself by typing. That's what I wanted to show the world. So I guess implicitly by giving myself that crutch, maybe that was a self-compassionate act. Yeah. Never thought of it that way. But for you, I could imagine, you know, if you just say, hey, I'm going to start taking an Advil at a certain point, and then I'm not going to think about it anymore, try it out. Maybe that'll be helpful for you.